Hey, welcome to the show. If you're standing up, it's not necessary. Sit down.
On the air everywhere, this is New England Broadcasting.
You're standing up for it. Take it easy.
Welcome to the Ron Van Dam Show. Hold on tight. Things can get a bit weird, if you like that sort of thing.
Yeah, today we're going to talk to a lot of people.
Whatever.
All right. Hey, good morning, good afternoon, good evening, good night. It's the Ron Van Dam Show.
Back, relax, grab a cup of coffee, a cup of tea, whatever your liquid libation may be in the morning, and join us as we take a look at the world around us. As much as it's a pleasure to be with you, the pleasure is actually all yours. And now, here's your host, Ron Van Dam.
Thank you so much, Julie. We've got a very interesting show today. This is a special. We're going to talk to a lot of different people. As you know, I do a lot of interviews on this show, try to do a little bit of everything. Information, stuff, you know, get you informed, my goodness. And we only do that by speaking to the experts, not just opinions. These are experts in their field. And we've got quite a few of them today, so make yourself comfortable. We're going to speak to Dr. Michael Greger. He's written a book, How Not to Die. That may come in handy. We're going to speak to a cancer survivor who says that she actually felt better going to work even though she was diagnosed with cancer. And she said, no, I'm going to keep on working. And she did and is better off for it. We're going to find out that you can actually refinance your auto loan. I didn't know that. But you can. We're going to talk about AFib with a fellow radio DJ. We're also going to, it's going to be crazy. We're going to also speak to an expert about memory care. I can't remember why. That's a joke. But we are. Phil Rettlinger is the president and CEO of Global Cyber Alliance. We're going to talk about internet scams. I always talk about that because we're at war. Our people are scamming us left and right. And I interview a lot of people about this, a lot of experts. We're also going to find out about elderly driving. Are you elderly? Do you know people that are elderly that are still driving around? Maybe they shouldn't be. Maybe they should. We're going to talk about that today. And then we're going to speak to Rick Harrow. He is the sports professor, and he started a new show, and you can listen to that on his network, and we'll speak to him about sports. I don't know much about sports, don't care for most sports. Sometimes I'm in the mood to watch them, mostly I'm not, we're going to talk about that. So all those topics, all those interesting things are going to unfold right in front of your eyes. Yeah, I'm serious. This is going to happen like really now. And it's going to be just one after the other, man. It's going to hit you like a brick. Like a brick, this thing's going to hit you. You ready? Here we go. This is exciting.
The three sweetest words in podcasting? Ron Van Dam. Wow. Gave myself a little erection saying that one. And I forgot to turn off the microphone.
Hello, Doctor.
Hello, Ron.
How are you today?
I am doing good, thanks.
Well, that's a good response. Dr. Michael Greger joins us now. He is the physician behind the trusted and wildly popular website, nutritionfacts.org, and we're talking about the possibility, could food actually be a medicine? Can it be?
Food absolutely can't be a medicine. You know, according to the Global Burden of Disease Study, the largest study of disease risk factors to date, funded by the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, the number one cause of death in these United States is our diet. Number one cause of disability is our diet. Now cigarettes only kill about 500,000 Americans every year, whereas our diet kills hundreds of thousands more. But the good news is we have tremendous power over our health, destiny, and longevity. The vast majority of premature death and disability is preventable with a plant-based diet and other healthy lifestyle behaviors.
Yeah, a lot of people would say to that, yeah, that's probably true, but it's not as tasty as all the fried food and the crap that I eat.
That's why we need a cookbook. How Not to Die cookbook.
Well, could you actually write one? Would you write a cookbook for us?
How about not only do I write it, but I hand it over.
Oh, my God.
December 5th, launch date. Knowing what's healthy and actually doing it.
Yes.
So I didn't want to just offer the why, but also the how. And so that's where the cookbook came out of, just to make kind of a practical guide for making kind of day-to-day grocery store type decisions.
Yeah. How long would it, if I started going the plant-based diet, or it's not even a diet, it's just a way of life, at what point would I start feeling good? To the point where I would say, I'm sticking with this because I am actually feeling results.
So we encourage people to give it a try for a few weeks. So, for example, there's this great free program called the 21-Day Kickstart Program. Go to 21daykickstart.org. Mm-hmm. Hundreds of thousands of people have done a bunch of different languages. Basically, you sign up first of every month. It starts. You do it as part of a kind of a peer social group where, you know, every day you get recipes and tips and kind of motivation, just kind of, you know, practical ways on how to put it to test. And the thought is that after 21 days, then you have the internal motivation. Mm-hmm. You'll just feel so much better. Your sleep's better. Digestion's better. All that. And so that, you know, people couldn't pay you to go back to your original life because nothing tastes as good as healthy feel.
There you go. That's the trick, to the point where you say to yourself after doing this, I don't even want that crap anymore. I don't even want that fast food, that fried food that I used to eat. That turns my stomach. I don't even want it.
Because you feel so much better. I mean, people don't even realize. People are like, you know, particularly young people, like, I feel fine, but they don't even realize, oh, wait a second, you know, now looking back, boy, I kind of have chronic indigestion, or I had, you know, these things that I just thought were kind of normal, aches and pains in the morning. No, it's not. I mean, normal is to have energy, is to, you know, greet the day, to improve your mood. I mean, you know, and so that's why. But again, you'd never know. And so many people that take this plunge, do this, they're kicking themselves. Why didn't I do this years ago?
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
And so, but you won't know how it will feel for you unless you give it a try.
Yeah. Now, interestingly enough, you don't fool around with the title of this book. You're pretty blunt. And the name of the book is How Not to Die. Which is like, okay, you cut through the chase here. This is where we're at. Why wouldn't I want to give this a try? Because I kind of don't want to die right now.
Right, and it's not how to not die, but how not to die, as in, you know, prematurely in pain after a long chronic disabling illness.
Well, same thing to me. And not to be confused with the book, How to Not Die. That's a different book. Okay.
No keys to immortality here, unfortunately.
Right. That should be your second book. Just change the words
around. I'm working on it.
All right. Now, can you give me an example of something that I would prepare myself that would be a meal?
Well, certainly there's you know, one doesn't need a cookbook. For some of them are, you know, really kind of simple, basic stuff. So for breakfast, having some oatmeal with some, you know, nuts and berries or something, you know, would be a wonderful way to start the day. I send my recommendations around a daily dozen foods I encourage people to fit into their daily diet. So beans every day, or any kind of legume, beans, lipids, chickpeas, lentils, berries every day, the healthiest kind of fruits, greens every day, the healthiest types of vegetables. And I talk about, you know, a tablespoon of ground flax seeds, quarter teaspoon of turmeric, best beverages, best sweeteners, how much exercise, all that stuff. So starting out with just, you know, oatmeal, you know, nuts, berries, you've already, you know, kind of checked off three of my kind of tick boxes of all the things I'm encourage people to fit into their daily diet. Got the whole grains and nuts and berries, and then it's just a matter of, you know, finding ways to squeeze in more vegetables as the day goes on.
Okay, so no meats, no chicken, no fish, nothing that was alive.
Well, plants are alive. Plants were alive.
Okay,
before
okay.
Ripped them out of the ground brutally.
All right.
Nothing ever had a bowel movement. How about that?
Hey, that's me now. I haven't had a bowel movement in 3 days.
Sounds like you really need some help.
That's the third book. Okay. No eggs, nothing like that, because that's a product of the bowel movement. Is that right? No eggs.
The best available balance of evidence suggests a healthiest diet is one that minimizes the intake of meat, eggs, dairy, processed junk, maximizes the intake of fruits, vegetables, legumes, whole grains, nuts and seeds, mushrooms, herbs, and spices.
Gotcha.
Basically, real food that grows out of the ground. These are our healthiest choices.
Okay. The book's available everywhere. This is the launch date, How Not to Die, which is putting yourself on a healthy track to, when you're living, to feel the best you can possibly feel, and that's where we want to be, certainly, at any age, especially when you get older, I would think, you know, because like you say, the aches and pains don't necessarily have to be there.
Right, it's never too early to start, but never too late. You know, many of the disease reversal studies were done at very late stages in life, when people have been eating terrible their entire lives and still able to reverse, for example, heart disease, type 2 diabetes, hypertension, opening up arteries without drugs, without surgery, just by changing what they eat.
Fantastic. Okay, pick up the book today, Dr. Michael Greger. Thank you so much for your time, How Not to Die. Thank you, sir.
You're welcome. Keep up the great work.
Take care. Bye-bye. Hello, everybody.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning, Ron.
Kathy Flora joins us. She's a cancer survivor and career coach. And Rebecca Nose is an MPP. I don't know what that is. Executive Director, Cancer and Careers. What is MPP?
A master of public policy.
Oh, whoa. Okay. stand back.
I don't know what to make of that.
I'm in awe. That's all. That's a good thing. Okay. All right. We're talking. Why is the topic of cancer in the workplace important?
Well, as we have seen over the last number of years, which is phenomenal, science is moving very fast. And so though more people are being diagnosed, they're being diagnosed sooner and more people are surviving.
Mm-hmm.
And so with that increase in cancer survivors in the U.S., we see an increase in addressing and managing all the other aspects of life that can be impacted by a cancer diagnosis, treatment, and recovery. And certainly work is a key piece of most of our lives.
Yes, it is.
As a breast cancer survivor myself, it was really overwhelming to face the diagnosis.
Mm-hmm.
In my case, work was a really major part of my life.
Yep.
And I had a lot of questions about whether I'd able to sustain my job and keep my level of performance and go through treatment at the same time.
Uh-huh.
But Cancer and Careers organization is now available to others like me so that they can find information about this and sort through those issues.
Good. And it's psychologically kind of better to put your mind elsewhere and continue on with your life.
It can be. Uh-huh. Obviously, each person as an individual feels differently, but when we survey, we hear incredibly high statistics for things like work helped people cope. 65% of our last survey audience said that. 63% said it helped them feel normal, and another 56% said unproductive. So it kind of echoes what Kathy's saying, that we really don't want to assume that work doesn't play an important role, and a role beyond a paycheck and health insurance. Those are important, but not the only reasons that work can be valuable.
Right, exactly. All right. So Why would someone who is diagnosed with cancer, why would they continually want to work? Is it because you just want to treat your mind to making everything normal?
I mean, I think that that's a part of it. It's about your full identity, your whole person, not just the part of you that needs to manage and go through treatment, and that can be a very big part. And some people take time off and come back to the work world, and so there are so many different ways that someone might handle it. But work is so many things for us, a source of support and community, a paycheck, benefits, our identity. We don't ask people what's the best book you ever read when we first meet someone. We ask, what do you do?
Right.
It's so ingrained in us.
Yeah, that's true. No one's asked me about my favorite book ever. Kathy, did you get the feeling that your coworkers were awkward as to how what to say, or and that they fell into normality rather quickly? What was your experience?
My experience was probably different than some people because everybody's is different. But once I decided to disclose my cancer diagnosis to my staff and my supervisors. Pretty early on in my treatment, I had an overwhelming outpouring of love and support. I had 40 women that worked with me. Eight of them stepped up and said, you know what, Kathy, I'm a survivor too. I didn't know that about them, but they spoke up. And my employer, for the most part, was very supportive too, allowed me to juggle my workload around my chemo and radiation, and also helped me curtail my really intensive travel schedule so I wouldn't necessarily get exposed to the germs on airplanes during times when I was really going through chemo. There were a couple of people who were a little bit rough because they had assumptions about what cancer would do to my productivity. But overall, everybody wanted to help.
Cool. Very good. How are you doing now, by the way?
Oh, I'm fantastic.
Yay.
I'm 13 years out.
Well, right. You deserve some of those letters after your name, too.
Well, I have a few. I just don't talk about them.
Okay. Uh-huh. I knew it. I knew it. I felt you had some letters going there. Okay. What about the current healthcare situation? Does that make anybody nervous as far as coverage is concerned and treatment and attitude?
It does. It does. Both anecdotally, I travel all over the country all year long, and I hear people's stories and struggles, but also this year for the first time we focused some of our annual Harris poll on that question because it's been such a big topic in the news. And what we heard back was almost half of employed patients and survivors feel they need to stay at their current workplace because they need health insurance. 35% are afraid to change their work status because it could affect or limit their health insurance. And there's also a great deal of concern that policy changes at any moment could affect their access to health care.
Yes.
And you know, Ron, I can tell you that of the people that I coach on the Cancer and Careers site, those who have stopped out of the workplace and want to get back into the workplace, regardless of gender, that issue of getting health insurance is one of the major reasons why they want to get back to work. And that's anecdotal, of course, but it comes up every single time that I end up responding to people.
Yeah. And we all thought that the whole idea of this universal healthcare kind of thing was that you didn't have to worry about that or think about that or be concerned about it. Ironic that we're in this position now. I don't want to get political, but damn them. Okay.
No, I mean, absolutely, without getting political, there are some core things that are just on a very practical level were game changers in the cancer community and for anyone who's facing a health issue. And so those being on the table and at risk have created another layer of worry. And the other thing that it impacts is people's ability to be entrepreneurial or to jump into a new kind of role without an 100% certainty it's going to work because that health insurance pull is back as a primary, real primary concern of access, not just I need health insurance. And so it's limiting in the idea of job lock as well.
Yeah, there's no question
Also, kind of bringing up the question of do I disclose to my employer? Because people are concerned somewhat about will they be viewed differently and will they possibly not be afforded the opportunity to stay at work. And although that question doesn't necessarily have to hurt their career, it does rise up for those of us who get a diagnosis.
And then there's the other
part.
Yeah, but the other part of it is even if you have the coverage, who says what that premium cost is going to be with a pre-existing anyway? So there's just so many layers to it. We're running short of time. I know you have to move on and spread the word. How do we get more information about this?
The easiest thing to do to start is go to cancerandcareers.org, and there you will find all of our programs and services and more information on all of these topics and issues.
Wonderful. Hey, I don't say this often in interviews, but it's been a pleasure speaking to you.
Thank you so much. It was a pleasure speaking with you.
Thank you very much. You take care now.
Take care.
Bye-bye. Hey, Jeff, how are you today?
I'm good, thank you.
Excellent. Jeff Danford joins us now. He's a pioneer in the lender industry. Been doing this more than 30 years, I understand.
A long time, longer than I would like to admit, but I've been an auto finance individual for, about 30 years.
So we would say that you probably know what you're talking about at this point.
I guess. Certainly hope so.
I would guess so. All right, this is about something that when I found out about the subject matter, I didn't know that this was possible, and that is that apparently you can refinance your auto loan. I did not know that. Am I alone in this?
You're not alone, Ron. In fact, the majority of Americans do not know that they can refinance their auto loan and save a significant amount of money to their monthly budget. It's a little known fact, and it's one of the reasons that we're kind of reaching out to your listeners today to try to spread the word during the holiday season that you can save money on your auto loan.
So this is very similar to doing a refinance on your home. You can do it with your car. I guess that's the bottom line.
It's similar in concept. Tends to be a simpler process than on your home, of course, but it's similar in concept.
Okay. Now, this is for loans and not leases. Is that right?
You can quote unquote refinance a lease as well. We can do that for you.
Really?
It ends up converting your lease into a new loan. But it is a process that you can do on your lease too if you're interested in keeping your vehicle at the end of the lease or at any time during the lease.
Ah, but you can't do that really until you make that decision. When you're on a straight lease thing, you have to say I'm going to purchase this car.
Well, yes, you'd want to know that you want to commit to the car rather than let the lease run its natural term.
Okay.
That's correct.
All right. So these are all kinds of possibilities here. Why would somebody? It sounds like a simple question, but it can be complicated. Why would somebody want to refinance their loan?
Well, in the case of our customer base, we save customers an average of $112 a month, and that's significant, right? And so they're typically going to pay a lower interest rate, lower overall interest, and lower monthly payment. Mm-hmm. So there's really the question is, why would you not want to refinance your loan, right, if you fall into that situation?
Right. So as an auto finance person, are most auto finance loans originally done through banks or through the car company? Does it vary? What is it usually?
Most auto loans today are originated through the dealership at the point of a consumer purchasing their new or used vehicle, and then the dealership places that with a bank or a finance institution.
Okay.
And so that's how the majority of auto loans are originated today.
So the dealerships, I mean, I would guess 90% of consumers would probably say, whatever you do percentage-wise. Some people don't even know what the percentage rate is on their loans for their auto, I assume.
That is correct because, they're excited by the new-to-them vehicle, and it's an exciting and emotional transaction, and they're not always aware. That's a generalized statement, of course. But they're not always aware of where they stand. So they can always call their existing lender and get those facts if they're not sure, or look it up on their contract if they're unsure of where they stand from an interest rate perspective.
Okay. Now, sometimes, like on mortgages, there are refinance fees that are above and beyond what's going on. Is that the same with auto refinancing?
It's generally not the same. It depends on the institution. Uh-huh. At ClearLane, for example, ClearLane.com, mm-hmm. we do not charge origination fees, so it's not it's free to the consumer to refinance.
Oh.
But each consumer should check with whatever institution they may be considering for that process to make sure.
So they would have to provide that information to whoever the refinance people are. Do you have to know that, or does the refinance faction do that investigation for you and take care of that?
No, so they're on your existing loan today, Ron, there's what's called a prepayment penalty,
yeah.
and really that would be extremely rare that your existing loan would have a prepayment penalty.
Okay.
So then the question is the refinancing company that you're using to refinance your loan, are they charging any type of origination fees or points that you might be familiar with on a home mortgage? In our case, we do not, and a consumer just wants to make sure they understand before
right.
they commit to refinance whether there's any fees associated with it or not.
Okay. That sounds good. Is it better usually to wait a year or so before you enter into refinancing? How soon can you actually start looking at this?
You can typically look at it as soon as 90 days after
oh.
your original loan,
oh.
but a year to 18 months it seems to be kind of the optimum time frame to look at refinancing. That that has allowed you to make payments on your current loan
uh-huh.
and establish a payment record, which often increases your credit score, which allows you to access a lower interest
oh,
rate.
Okay, so wait a little bit, you know, not
yes.
the next day. Okay, are there any downsides to this, to refinancing?
There really aren't downsides as long as you're dealing with a reputable company and particularly one such as ours that's not charging any fees for that.
Right, right.
Then, assuming you qualify for interest savings, and not every individual does, but assuming you
right.
qualify for interest savings, then there's really no downside to following that process.
Okay. All right. So, so you just kind of figure out where it stands, and the company will, the refinancing company will tell you how much you'd be saving and what the new rate is and all that kind of stuff. That's wonderful. Okay.
That's exactly right. They're going to educate you on
right.
kind of what your existing loan is and how much you're saving over your existing payment, and so you can make an educated decision at that point.
Did not know this. Now you're going to tell me that the earth is round. Is it?
It's a great benefit to consumers, and as we talked about earlier, it is little known at this point. And
I have
no idea. Thank you for helping to spread the word.
Yeah, no problem. All right, so where do I go to find out more about this?
You go to clearlane.com, and you can either engage online or you can call our toll-free number and get a real live human being
All
that
right.
can help explain any of the variances to you, and it really in minutes you can find out whether you can save money or not. It's there's no obligation, there's no charge for it,
oh.
and it won't harm your credit score by doing it.
Well, I don't know why I wouldn't do it then. I guess I wouldn't at least inquire about it. Well, thank you so much.
Exactly.
Pleasure speaking to you there, Jeff, and thanks
thank
for the information.
Thank you, Ron.
Take care.
Thank you for having me on.
All right.
All right.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Hi, Ken. How are you?
Hey, good morning. Great, Ron. Thanks for having me on.
Great. Ken Desha joins us now. We're talking about the risks of stroke and about AFib. What exactly is AFib?
You know, Ron, it's this common type of irregular heartbeat.
Uh-huh.
I was shocked. I was playing golf with a buddy of mine this past summer, and I hadn't seen him for a while, somebody I started in radio with,
yeah.
and I found out that, you know, he was diagnosed with this,
yeah.
so I just wanted to find out more about it.
Now, what are the symptoms of it? How would I know that this might be a concern of mine?
You know what? Listen, there's so much detail to go into, and I'm a radio DJ, but I'll tell you, the reason is because I wanted to find out more about it.
Yeah.
we got together with Bristol Myers Squibb, the Pfizer Alliance, National Stroke Association, and iHeartMedia. There's a website that's got all the info called TuneInToAFib.com.
Okay.
Because the whole point of this is to raise awareness and make people realize that there's something to do. You have to find out more about it. Don't ignore it.
Okay. So anything that's weird going on in the heart area, we should check it out, I guess.
Don't you think sometimes we take more care and talk more about our cars than we do our own health?
Oh, there's no question.
We're guys it'll pass. It's just a little thing. Then it'll go away. And as we get older, and thank God we're getting older. But I'm in my 50s, and so is my friend. And I found out that this AFib, atrial fibrillation, not caused by a heart valve problem, people are 5 times more likely to suffer a severe stroke.
Mm.
And I thought, no, I have to use my voice. Talk to your doctor. There are ways of managing this.
Okay. So heart and iHeart kind of make sense.
It's funny. That just was a great coincidence. Yeah. But they said, what can we do? And the one thing, I've been a rock DJ here in New York forever,
mm-hmm.
and I know that music is such a powerful force to impel people to action. So I got together an old friend, Southside Johnny and the Asbury Jukes, great rock and blues music from the Jersey Shore.
Mm-hmm.
If you go to TuneIntoAFib.com, you're going to see a great live private concert from Southside Johnny and the Asbury Jukes. That's a motivation. Catch some great live music. Oh, and by the way, all the information you need about AFib is right there. TuneIntoAFib.com.
All right, so we'll check that out. I mean, I've heard of it, and I know people that have it, but I don't quite understand what it is. I mean, I get a fluttering every once in a while when I get nervous or anxious, but, who knows what that is?
You know what? You just hit the nail on the head, Ron. There's so many times. If it wasn't for my wife saying, and when are you going to the doctor, we kind of go, it'll pass. It'll go away, and the more I dug into this, the more I learned that the answer is talk to your doctor because you need to reduce your risk of stroke. Okay. That word is terrifying to
me. Or talk to your local radio talk show host. No, that's not right.
That'll work too. And at TuneIntoAFib.com, you're finding out info and you're getting a great live rock concert. Oh, and there's one other thing we put on there that's really cool.
Yeah.
There's a short quiz that people can take about AFib, to do anything. I mean, it's really easy. But for everybody who takes the quiz, $1 will be donated to the National Stroke Association,
to
$30,000. So just for clicking on TuneIntoAFib.com, watching some rock, taking the quiz, you've made a donation for a great cause.
Great. You know, I confuse every medical condition with gas. seriously, when you have excessive gas, everything feels like you got everything. So it's worth checking out because you don't know what's what sometimes. We have complex lifestyles here and political climates that are difficult to swallow, and you never know what it is.
You're absolutely 100% right, and I'm like everybody else. I'm like, it'll go away. If it doesn't go away in a couple of weeks, I'll see somebody. After a couple of weeks, we usually give it another couple of weeks. Isn't that true?
It's true. And the other thing, Ken, which I guess you agree with, is that have an annual checkup no matter how old you are. And when you have the annual checkup, bring stuff like this up. Discuss everything that's a concern as long as you're there. But go at least once a year.
And do you know how many times, and I'm sure I'm not alone, where my wife has said, hey, if you go and made an appointment for your checkup, and I said, I feel fine, and I get the look.
Yeah.
And anybody who's been married for a long time knows what the look is. That look to my primary care physician.
Yeah, it's one of two things. Either you're not going to the doctor enough, or why don't you buy your own underwear? I don't understand why you can't do that. They say that to me all the time. All right, Ken, one more time, the website where we go for that information.
Thanks. It's really easy. It's TuneIntoAFib.com. That's AFIB. TuneIntoAFib.com. Great live music from Southside Johnny and the Asbury Jukes. Information about AFib. You realize that, there are 7 million Americans living with this condition, and I guarantee you that there are people in the audience, people that have it that might not be doing anything about it.
Yeah.
And that short quiz, going to be a $1 donation to the National Stroke Association.
Or you may actually have it yourself. You don't really know. Okay.
Exactly.
Ken, thank you so much for your time today. Good luck with the show. Thanks for speaking to us.
Well, I really appreciate it. Have a great holiday.
Take care. You too. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Lauren Shook joins us now. He's Silverado President, CEO, Chairman, and co-founder, co-author of the newly released book, New Possibilities in Memory Care, The Silverado Story. And we're talking about Alzheimer's disease, which is becoming quite interesting as the senior population grows immensely with the baby boomers. We're looking at this even more, I understand.
Yes. It's a prevalent problem throughout the United States and the world, Ron, right now. And it's an age-related disease. So as the population successfully ages from other conditions, they are at greater risk of getting a memory impairment. But it doesn't have to be. It's not a natural course of aging. It is, in fact, a disease.
Okay. Now, you're referred to as a memory care futurist. What exactly does that mean?
Well, you know, as it's a term people have given me, memory care futurist, is probably overstated, Ron. But but what it really means is, Silverado set out 21 years ago to really change the trajectory of how people with memory impairing diseases are served, and recognition that we shouldn't focus on what people have lost, Ron. We should focus on what people have as their capacity to be able to do things, and don't surround them with what previously they were surrounded with. You can't do this, you can't do that, and it was all with good intentions, people trying to protect them. But instead, give them an environment where they can actually live life and thrive and enjoy life. So, the behaviors that people were seeing from what they would consider Alzheimer's disease, frequently that wasn't from the disease at all, Ron. It was from the frequent drumbeat of no, you can't do that. No, you can't go there. And people were frustrated. So it's change, really change the world in the way memory care diseases are served, and recognize that people who have memory impairing diseases, they want to love and be loved just like you and I.
Sure. Do we actually know what goes on inside the mind of a person with this disease? I mean, it's difficult to communicate sometimes. Do we actually understand what phases of the brain are still quite refreshingly active and other parts not?
There's a good deal of science behind what's going on in the brain right now, but like anything involving the brain, there are things that are just unexplainable, unknown. But the most recent memories are the attacked earliest on in this disease.
Oh, I see.
So a person may not be able to remember what they had for breakfast, but they can tell you, that battle they had in World War II. They can tell you about their wedding very vividly and very clearly.
Interesting.
There's the beta amyloid plaque theory, where the neurons of the brain are being damaged and destroyed.
Right.
There's also another theory about tau. A third of the brain is gone by the end of life for a person with Alzheimer's. You can go to a brain lab at any of the universities, and you've got great universities there, and you can hold an Alzheimer's disease brain in one hand and a normal brain in the other. And that Alzheimer's disease brain is a third lighter.
Yeah.
And a third, you can see the gap.
So there's a difference.
The scientists said, the person can't regain the ability to walk or talk or feed themselves or any of that sort of thing because of this, Ron. And we started the company 21 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
We were getting people walking, talking, and feeding themselves. And with a geriatric fellow assigned to Silverado from UCSD, University of California, San Diego, where they discovered the beta amyloid plaque theory and did international studies on Alzheimer's disease, the chair of neurology, Dr. Thal, one of the leading neurologists in the world at the time, said that's impossible. Well, all the chairs of medicine came out for a half-day case conference with Steve Winter and I at Escondido. He was going to prove to the other chairs that this is impossible. And he wound up, after the experience, walking out of the community, turned to Steve in the parking lot turned to me and says, I don't know how you're doing it. Nobody in the world's doing it, but keep it up. So that's the part where, you know, it's the spirit in the person, Ron, and we touch the spirit in the person. We use the best of science, that's for sure. We will reduce medications that shouldn't be there. We use medications that should be there. We treat people for depression, and we do all kinds of things, but it's really letting the person live life and tapping that inner spirit that is in all of us.
Interesting. And that is the Silverado story.
Well, that is what the story is about. There's many, many chapters.
Many facets to it, yeah. And this is outlined in the book, which is New Possibilities in Memory Care, the Silverado Story. And it also tells us that this is a team deal between families, the person affected, doctors, research. There's a lot of components in this.
Absolutely, Ron. It is a whole team. Mm-hmm. And when you are with a program that serves you well, you will find relief as a family member. You won't have to worry about your loved one. You've got a fine operation up there in the New England area, Benchmark Assisted Living. You've got Sunrise. You've got a number of fine operators. We're not up there, you know, but we are in other parts of the country. And, you know, so getting to an operator that really knows what they're doing, the family will feel relief, and the family will feel like they no longer have to be the caregiver of their loved one. They can now be the daughter, the husband, the wife, you know, the son, and get back to normalcy there. And that's what you need to be finding and looking for.
I guess the your book is like a handbook for people that are looking for answers.
You know, the book gives people answers. The book gives people hope. It gives people stories. You can find the book at silverado.com/story.
Okay.
Just Google that. And, you know, the book has been very helpful to families.
Mm-hmm.
It's a tool that people leading the industry use. I was at an international conference just recently where a fellow from Puerto Rico says he gives this to every one of his executive directors when they start with the company. And that's not an uncommon story from South America or Canada or other countries doing the same thing. It's also a book, surprisingly enough to me, Ron and Steve, it's a book that researchers are getting value out of too, and physicians in the industry. So, but it gives families, you know, how to, and gives them examples of what should be.
Great. Well, he's Lauren Shook, and it's New Possibilities in Memory Care, the Silverado Story. You can go to silverado.com/new possibilities to get more information and get a hold of the book and such. Pleasure speaking to you. Always good to hear positive things coming out of otherwise. So thank you again.
Thank you, Ron.
Take care. Hi, Phil. How are you?
Hi, Ron.
Good to speak to
you. I'm doing well, sir. How are you?
I'm good.
Thank you.
Phil Reitinger joins us now. He's president and CEO of Global Cyber Alliance, and we're talking about how not to be scammed this holiday season. I can't think of a person I'd rather speak to than you at this point, because I'm getting scammed all over the place, I have a feeling.
You probably are. Most
you probably
do.
Are. You probably are. Okay, that makes me feel better. How do I protect myself? I'm making online purchases. I'm throwing my money all over the place. I'm getting things in email and in the mail asking me to buy things, and they know more about me than I thought they would.
So the most important thing, Ron, is to use your common sense.
All
right. You know, if something sounds too good to be true, it probably is too good to be true. Take real care before... real care before clicking on links, because you know those bad people you're talking about are sending you phishing emails all the time, and they've gotten good enough; they're really hard to spot.
They're hard to spot because some of them have actually stolen logos from other companies. I got an email from CVS offering me things, and I called CVS because I wasn't sure about this, and they said, "No, that's not us. Someone's taken our logo. We know about this." That's pretty scary.
Yep. Absolutely. Like they're very good. They'll take legitimate emails from someone and just substitute the link so you go to a different site. That's another reason. You know, there are other things that consumers need to do. You know, just in case you go the wrong place, you need to make sure your software is fully up to date, so you've patched all the stuff. So if, for example, Microsoft or Apple tells you need to install security updates, you need to do that. And there are free services out there, like the Quad9 service, the Quad9 DNS service that was launched back in November, that people can use to help protect themselves as well.
Okay. Because now I don't even trust the updates. When I see that there's an update for something, I'm going, well, is this really an update, or is somebody getting into my system here? And now, you know, I don't even trust that anymore. It's turned us into a world of non-trusters.
Yeah, the big thing on the updates thing is you be really suspicious if you're browsing a website and a window just pops up saying that you need to an update. Then you know if you use a computer a fair amount, you'll have a better sense of that.
Okay,
but
all right,
it's really important to not click on those things, because that's a great way to install malware on your computer.
Okay,
you know, one of the nice things I mentioned before, Quad9 DNS.
Yes.
So this is, if people go to quad9.net, so it's Q-U-A-D, the number 9.net, it's a service that operates in the background. It's free, and it knows a whole bunch of bad sites that are trying to, you know, phish your system or install malware, and blocks those so that you know, if you click on a bad link, there's a good chance you won't go there. So those sorts of things are very important, because that's what people need. We can't, you know, people are very smart. But people aren't used to trying to understand what's real and what's false online. So what everybody needs to do is take those things that will help them make effective decisions, or make them for them and prevent them from going to bad places.
Okay. How is Quad9 funded, if it's free?
Quad9 is free. It was created by a couple of nonprofits in IBM, the Global Cyber Alliance, which I head, and another one called Packet Clearinghouse, and it's funded by contributions by charities, particularly work from Quad9 itself and from GCA, and also from IBM. And as a nonprofit, it is out there seeking continuing funding so it can be around forever.
Wow, that's the first good thing I've heard in a long time. It is, I'm telling you.
We need to, it is, it's a brave new world out there. If you look at the statistics, it is sort of scary. About 60% of consumers in the U.S. say they've had their computer infected with malware.
Yeah.
About three quarters of them have mistyped a web address and gone into a site that they didn't want. You know, maybe they mistype Amazon or eBay, and suddenly they end up in this place that does not look legitimate. So it can be very, very difficult. And, you know, there are consumers have over about 35% have stopped an online purchase because of security fears. Yeah, that's why we need to get people using these things that are available. And if people are interested in more safe shopping tips, there's a great site called staysafeonline.org, which gives general tips. If they want to learn more about Quad9, again, it's really simple. It's quad9.net. So it's just like nine letters, including a period.
Okay. Well, God, thank you so much. That's my holiday gift. Thank you. I appreciate that. Because, I'm just growing so skeptical of everything I do online. I constantly get phone calls on my phone saying, which is where you get phone calls, saying, this is Microsoft, your computer is infected, we can help you through it. I mean, I know that that's ridiculous, but I don't think my grandparents know, or my kids perhaps, you know, and it's like, wow, this is very predatory.
It is very predatory, and people are doing the same things online that they're doing with the phone. And they get better and better. Fortunately, the technology is getting better. We we need to make sure people understand and use the things that are there to help them. There are the most important thing to remember is to be a little bit suspicious.
Yeah.
You know, I would say don't let that prevent you from updating your computer, because you really need to do it. But if you get an odd looking pop-up window in a browser that says, your computer is infected with malware, click here to solve the problem, chances are clicking there is actually going to install the malware.
Absolutely. Yeah. When you go to email, if something looks, how do you know if an email is real or not? In other words, once you click and open an email, sometimes you're in trouble just from doing that. How are there ways to know that?
Well, the biggest thing to be careful of in email is if it, you know, one, be very suspicious about emails that you don't expect.
Okay.
And if, unless you're absolutely certain who it came from, don't click on a link in an email.
Okay.
You know, if you clicked on something and said, we're going to send you a confirmation email and you get it right away, maybe you trust that. But, you know, I would say never, ever click on a link that appears to be from a bank. Because the, you know, those fraudsters are so good right now. I mean, sometimes you can hover over a link with your mouse, and you'll see it actually doesn't go to, you know, Bank of XYZ. I mean, it goes to Bank of XYZ dot, you know, something, dot something, dot something. So it's actually not the site at all.
Wow.
Or people will make up things. So, you know, if it's the Fredonia Bank, it might be FredoniaBankingCompany.com instead of FredoniaBank.com. They'll do these lookalike addresses.
Wow.
Got to be really careful.
Okay. Give me those websites again where I can protect myself.
Sure. So to set up the use of Quad9, which will work in the background, it's free. It'll help protect you. Go to look at the materials on Quad9, Q-U-A-D, the number 9.net. And for general shopping tips, how to stay safe with your computer, there's a lot of good stuff on staysafeonline.org.
Perfect. Hey, thanks so much for your time today. This has been extremely helpful, and I appreciate it.
Great,
Phil.
Ron.
Have a good holiday, Phil.
Nice to talk with you.
All right, bye-bye.
Sure, bye-bye.
Jody Olszewski joins us now. She's an MS in gerontology. Did I pronounce that properly?
Almost, gerontology.
That was close. That was awfully close. Okay. And that has to do with geriatrics, I assume.
It does. It has to do with understanding the aging process.
Okay. Now, we're discussing something that's kind of sensitive, and that is driving, which is sensitive in itself for many people. But when you become a senior and more toward the elderly end of life, there are some concerns involved. And there's always that age-old question, not to make a pun of it, when should you not be driving anymore?
Yeah, that's right. I mean, I think it's an important question. But, you know, it's also important to remember that driving is so essential, obviously, for all of us. We age, right? It becomes increasingly important to stay connected. So you're right. It's a very sensitive subject, which is why we've spent a lot of time researching it and talking with family members to understand the best way to approach it. And, you know, essentially the starting place, we think, is if families are concerned, instead of, you know, getting in the driving seat yourself, we suggest you get in the passenger seat and drive with your older relative and observe driving over a period of time so that you have some factual information before you think about having those conversations.
Yeah. But before you do that, get in the passenger seat of a younger person, too, and you also may feel the same way, unfortunately. Seriously. So, okay. You know, it's psychologically, you know this better than anybody, is that that is the last vestige of freedom in a human being's mind. Once you take their independence away, their car away, they are totally dependent on other people. That's such an incredible milestone for a human being.
It is, and it's so essential to a person's well-being, right? So I think other than observing the driving and preparing for the conversation, you also want to do some research so you're aware of transportation resources, or if you have family around, think about how you can not only take that older person to their doctor's appointments, mm-hmm. right, but how about go out for ice cream on a warm evening, or doing those things that just kind of keep us alive and give us joy in our lives. I think that's really important, too.
Yeah. Jody, most of us, when we get older, become quite obstinate. I've been obstinate since I was like 20, so it didn't change for me. But just about everybody you would speak to who's elderly would always argue that, no, I'm just fine. You're wrong. I'm in total control. It's almost like an argument may pursue or ensue. How do you deal with that?
Yeah, and I would say that not everybody is argumentative. I mean, overall, older drivers adjust their driving as they notice changes, right? That's why a lot of people don't drive at night. But certainly, some of us do have family members that, you know, when you have the conversation, because so much is at stake, it can get argumentative. So you want to try to avoid that by really thinking about who's the best messenger, what's the best time to do that, and to be sensitive in having that conversation. The other resource that's out there is if the family member does deny everything and is completely refusing to consider it, you can suggest a comprehensive driving evaluation, which is conducted by an occupational therapist, and that brings an objective professional into the mix, and so we do suggest that as well.
Okay. I mean, not to make a joke or anything, this must be a huge problem in Florida.
Well, you know, I think that it can be an issue for people as they age. And so in situations where there are more older people, I think it's just important that there are resources and family members are involved.
Yeah. What are some of the obvious warning signs?
I can talk about a few of them. I do want to make the point that it obviously a single minor driving mistake doesn't mean a person needs to stop driving.
Correct.
It's really
Correct.
A pattern of warning signs you want to look for. But there are signs, and we have a list of these in some of our resources. So on the minor side of things, you know, if you're noticing that the person's having extreme difficulty turning when they're backing up, if they're using hitting curbs, using incorrect signaling, parking inappropriately, those are things to pay attention to. Yeah. On the more severe side, obviously, if they've got a lot of near misses, if they seem to have a real delayed response, or if they have confusion at exits, I mean, those are signs where you definitely want to get involved and really try to, come up with a solution sooner rather than later.
Yeah. Many states in the country don't retest at all at any certain age. In other words, as long as you can read the eye chart there in the little viewfinder, they'll renew your license. Are some states doing it differently?
I mean, I think there's a lot of variation. What we suggest is that really families think about a comprehensive driving evaluation as the best way to determine if a person's safe on the road, because it's an extensive evaluation that involves, you know, a cognitive, physical, and an on-the-road test. And that's really what we have found is the best way to determine whether a person's safe on the road or not.
Yeah, okay. Survey-wise, did anything come up that was interesting?
Yeah, a couple things were interesting. One is that, you know, the majority of people, these are drivers over the age of 50, told us that they're most likely to listen to family members before, and they prefer that rather than a police officer, obviously, or even a healthcare professional. About 51% do have concerns about a family member. So that just means that this affects all of us, you know, if we have older relatives who are still living. It's really important. And drivers also told us that they want someone to talk to them if they're having incidences of getting lost or being forgetful, or a change in health, or if that person's just concerned about their safety. So I think what this shows us is that we should be getting involved, even though it's a sensitive topic. You know, approach it thoughtfully, but don't avoid it. It's important.
It's life or death, not only for the relative, but for others on the road, certainly. And we hear stories all the time of people driving into stores by mistake, hitting the gas pedal when they thought they were hitting the brake. And that's, you know, those signs are almost too late, I assume.
Yeah, well, that's why we suggest, you know, having conversations before you're even concerned.
Yeah.
That's the best
scenario.
That you catch it way before it gets to that point.
Absolutely. Oh, okay. Once more, where we go for information.
Sure, thehartford.com/lifetime, and we have a guidebook called We Need to Talk that you can download right there.
Excellent. Thank you so much for your time today, Jody.
Sure, thanks for having me.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
I understand there's a new sports show on the horizon.
Yeah, well, it's on the horizon, and it's been in existence for 4 months. It's called The Power of Sports. Every month, we look into the stories that aren't usually covered on traditional business outlets. I am a sports business guy, teach a sports law class at Harvard, and did a lot of deals, and we know that it's a $1 trillion business of sports, and about 8% of it was philanthropy-oriented a couple of years ago. Now it's about 12%. So we know that owners, including the Krafts and with Grossbeck and the Celtics and everybody around the country, understand it's important to do good. But this focuses on stories that do great by doing good, building fields, keeping kids in school as a consequence. Chris Long donating his entire Eagle salary to the Charlottesville recovery after their issues at University of Virginia, and on and on. And we focus on all of those stories. So we take my business background and access to business leaders, and we put a philanthropic spin on it. And I can't tell you how much support we've had over the first 4 months and onward and upward for the next couple of years.
That's nice. So we call this a feel-good show. Is that what they're calling it?
Well, I would call it a feel-good show because, you know, every time we see the sports pages sometime, and some people even get turned off by it, we see the Kaepernick kneeling, and we see the violence, and we see the late hits. This is all the good stuff that comes out of it, but it's grounded in business reality. So it's not just what the world could look like with fairy dust. It's all about spending money, making significant commitments. Dan Tauris, the sponsor involved in Group 1001 that's staking the core of the show with a match, committed $1.5 million to a Fields and Futures program in Oklahoma City, and graduation rate has already increased 15 to 20%. There, because people understand new fields, new facilities, people feel good about it, and those are the kind of stories we cover.
Okay. Well, I guess some good comes out of that. I think sports has a nasty side of it and a very weird side too. I mean, when you talk about players making millions upon millions upon millions of dollars, I don't see the balance there of anything that makes sense, to be honest with you. And as far as the business end of it is concerned, I don't understand how we got from recreation fund to people becoming financial kings.
Well, that's easy because that's been my core life, and the answer is $1 trillion.
Yeah.
Media rights, fans, PSLs, new stadiums, and so it's the same sport. I know this sounds flip, but it's the same sport it was 50 years ago. When I started in the sports business, just a few extra zeros.
Yeah.
And a lot of extra zeros.
A lot of extra.
But a lot of people will translate that, will translate that into, that's bad. So the Kaepernick kneeling, the NFL protest turned a lot of people off. And the bottom line is the NFL has now created a $100 million development fund that is not just smoke and mirrors. It's real money that players will sit on the board and allocate. Bail reform, social justice, urban development, education programs. So there are tangible good stories that come out of all of these negatives, and that's what the show intends to talk about.
Gotcha. Okay. And when is the show visible to us?
It's visible on all of the Fox regions. It's on a monthly basis, and it's shown 141 times a month. Across the 11 Fox regions, DirecTV, Dish, you look up Power Sports, you'll find it airing all across the Fox regionals, and also Power Sports TV. It streams off the website as well.
Pretty cool. Why did you decide to get involved in this particular venture? You've been doing this forever, you know, in the field. was it the feel good part of it? Was it indeed the stories that aren't told?
Well, it's a little bit of that, and frankly, when you're in the business for so many years, and you know, I've written a couple books and doing all the stadium deals and knowing all the owners, and you realize that those are all big stories, and everybody has a negative or positive spin on it, but all of these other stories continue to happen but get underreported, J.J. Watt dollars, et cetera. And my comment would be, let's use the power, my contacts, the access, Dan Powers's unbelievable sponsorship, and put it together show that I would executive produce, control the content, and develop new monthly stories and see how it tested. And after the pilot, everybody jumped on it and said, let's take it to all of our communities, and that's when it started.
Excellent. Well, yeah, showing the better side of all subject matters and all topics is always welcome in our society these days, especially. So kudos as far as that's concerned, certainly.
Well, thank you very much. And of course, everybody always talks about the competitive on the field stuff. And as I said before, as a Miami Dolphin fan, I leave that alone. Although I have immense respect for the crafts and always come up, and I'll be up there again. Assuming they play the two games at home, which they will, and then the Super Bowl. But the bottom line of all of it is people tend not to realize all the good that the Kraft family does. And it's not an apologist for anything. It's just the stories that need to be reported.
I suppose so. You know what scares me just a little bit about sports? And, of course, around the world, there's much violence that actually comes out of sports, as there's much violence that comes out of religion. That makes no sense either. But it's sometimes it becomes a little weird. I drive around here, this area, and people are dressed up like Tom Brady day and night wearing his numbers. And I feel like saying to them, okay, I get it. Sports are fun. Why are you dressing up like these people? It's almost like, it's like, okay, you've gone a little bit over the line in my estimation about what makes sense and what doesn't.
Well, let's put it this way. You're not going to change people's intensity or passion. That's pretty clear.
Yeah, it's pretty clear.
You try to channel it in a productive way. The Charles Barkley comment about athletes are not role models. He's absolutely wrong. Mm-hmm. I mean, it is what it is. Some athletes may choose to step away, but that's their problem. It is society that gives us the ability to channel these athletes. Houston Strong. You remember Big Poppy and Boston Strong. We all remember how important that is, and
why?
I went to Harvard Law School. My thesis was on excessive sports violence in the criminal law.
Mm-hmm.
And so I understand that there is a time and place for all of it. The bottom line with it, though, is that you've got to make sure you use it and understand how you channel it for social good, because it will not go away. As I said, it's 12% of a $1 trillion business.
Well, that's very true. I mean, even in celebrityship, in show business, there are those that actually become role models for children, for example, and it makes them a better person, and those people are respected, and some of them are actually destructive in their force and in their popularity. So it goes for any entertainment source. You can be a role model or not, and we do respect those that do become positive ones.
Well, bottom line is, please, you know, watch the show, we come to every market. We have a national focus from national business leaders. We also have a regional focus. We'll come to New England later on this year, and we'll focus on all of the teams and then be a judge on whether sports generally is good or not. And if even the naysayers and the cynics ought to realize that there are good stories in this business.
Yeah, there's good to everything. How do we catch you on the Twitter and the social media thing?
At Ricaro and Power of Sports TV, we will also be able to audition, as I said, DirecTV, do it traditionally for people that are old-fashioned and just want to watch it on television.
Hey, great. Rick, thanks for putting up with me. I appreciate it.
Oh, there's no putting up with at all except for your Patriot fandom.
Yes, okay. All right, that's enough. take care, Rick. Bye-bye.
Thanks.
There you have it. Huh? Yeah, I know. You went to school to learn things when you were a kid. You're learning more on this show than you ever did in your whole life. I know. I realize that. I know. Yeah. And by the way, you're welcome. I'll be back again tomorrow with a brand new show. Until then, I wish you peace. I really do. I'm serious, because you're going to need it. You really, you're gonna need all the fish you can get. Thank you to all my guests and all the experts who joined me today. You're good people, and I thank you.